Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We have some breaking news. It's not good for the Saints. Eric McCoy is out for the rest of the 2025 season. We were just speaking with Jeff Nowak about that. Well, welcome back. And Guy Williams joins us, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be with you.
So, Guy, let's talk about this first topic, the first brands crash and its significance. A lot of folks probably haven't heard about it, but what's interesting about this is it repeats itself over and over and over again. What investors don't know about is what typically scares them most, and it seems as though there was a lot of off-balance sheet activity going on here that's got a lot of people concerned.
Yeah, and rightfully so. There's a company called First Brands, and while you think you may not know who they are very big in the auto industry. So First Brands had a number of brands that you've heard of, like Race Bestos. They also had the primary windshield wiper firm. It was a tremendous company, had employees, 26,000 employees. So really
huge.
Big. Yeah, Fram Auto Filters, companies that you would know about. And so it sort of operated under a bit of an umbrella because people knew those brand names and thought, okay, this must be a good company. Things are going well. What they didn't realize is Patrick James, from Kuala Lumpur originally, started this business with borrowed money. And amazingly, he was able to acquire a number of companies. As I say, ended up with 26,000 employees scattered around the world. And he was able to borrow money. Jefferies, a big Wall Street bank, helped him. Millennium Hedge Fund helped him. Point Bonita Capital, which is a hedge fund part of Jefferies. UBS. All these people loaned him money. And what he was doing is borrowing on invoices. So if I make something and sell it, deliver it to Shell Oil for the oil field, I now have an invoice. Shell's going to pay me. So very legitimate to borrow. But what he was also doing was going to vendors and saying, "Look, I'm going to get paid by Shell. So if you'll advance the money to the supplier, then I'll pay you back when I get my invoice from Shell." So now what he's done is borrowed twice on the same invoice, once when it came in, once to pay the supplier. So he was double pledging collateral. He pledged inventory that didn't exist. He used private equity and ended up with term loans, off-balance sheet loans, invoice loans, supply chain loans, and asset-based loans. And when the thing blew up last week, the creditors woke up and said, wait a minute, they're literally billions of dollars are missing. We don't know where it went. We don't know what happened to it. And the intriguing thing is, you know, sometimes the past is prologue. When Patrick James was in high school, you have these little slogans you post by your picture. The slogan that Patrick James posted by his picture in high school was, I'm broke.
Yeah. So, obviously, I guess the concern is that we had a lot of people lending this guy money, but we weren't very intrusive about where this was going. And when you have these private credit firms that are lending you money off balance sheet, they're not regulated, and these company owners are not revealing a lot to these investors, right?
Yeah, one of the problems is he was using a number of different financing techniques that don't show up. That reverse factoring technique where you get someone to pay the supplier, and then you say, when the invoice becomes real, then, you know, I'll pay you. But then he was pledging the invoice as well. He also had unusual sale terms. So he would say, look, we're going to advance you all these windshield wipers or whatever, and pay us when they sell, but if they don't sell, we'll take them back. Well, he was presenting those as if they were real invoices and as if they were real receivables that had to be paid. But they were actually conditional. They weren't. It was putting the inventory in somebody's location, like AutoZone, and saying, look, if you sell it, great, pay us. If you don't, you can ship it back to us. But then borrowing on that, and then borrowing on the inventory advance to make those products. And literally, as they start sifting through, you know, the numbers of billions that are missing has escalated from $2.5 billion to maybe $4 billion, which is real money. And now they have also collateralized loan obligations where Jeffries sold debt that was originated by this company, and people bought pools of this debt. And the unfortunate thing is, they had BDO, which is a big CPA firm, gave them an audit saying, yeah, the books are okay. And so people were relying on their Wall Street broker. They were relying on the audit. And it turned out that the guy was just conducting a massive fraud. And I think one of the things that should have tipped people off is some of these financing deals, he was paying 20 to 30% interest. The company only had sales of $5 billion. It had significantly more in debt than it had in actual annual sales. So how in the world can you pay that? And in the auto business, the margins are tight. You know, they may be 5%, 6%, certainly no more than 10%. How could a company afford to pay 20 to 30% on its borrowings in a thin margin business? You know, you and I'd look at that and say, well, this doesn't make sense. You can't borrow at 30 when you're receiving only 10 or less as your gross margin when you sell the product. You have to have negative cash flow, which in fact he did, and that's where a lot of money just disappeared. He kept borrowing and borrowing to fund acquisitions, fund payroll, and then when the music stopped and he couldn't borrow any more money, suddenly the payments to vendors stopped. They discovered that the collateral had been pledged at least twice, in some cases three times. And, you know, last week he resigned from the company as CEO and said, everything I did was always ethical.
So how do you get to this point where, I mean, this company had, you know, It had liabilities between greater than $10 billion, maybe as much as $50 billion, against assets that it owned of $1 billion to $10 billion. And an auditor doesn't square this up. I mean, when you have products on contingency that you're actually holding out on your financial as assets, I mean, are they not looking at processes as to how we gained that asset? I mean, if you have 100,000 wiper blades in your inventory, there has to be a commensurate amount of money that was paid to somebody for these wiper blades, right? I mean,
yeah, and that was the challenge, is that people were not digging into the actual sales terms and looking and saying, wait, these weren't actually sold, they're on consignment. And so you've got consignment goods and you're pretending like that was an actual sale. You've marked up the price to an unrealistic level, and then you borrow against it a couple of times. And it's amazing to me that a big CPA firm would sign off on that. And Jefferies, the investment firm, was right on the verge of refinancing all the debt when Apollo Asset Management started selling the debt short. And people started scratching their heads and saying, well, what do they know that we don't know? And that was what tipped the iceberg, because Apollo has a pretty good record of identifying problems. And when they started selling short, meaning that they thought that they could buy back the debt for pennies on the dollars. And in fact, they're right. The debt in this company is now trading in the 30 to 20 cents per dollar range. So it woke everybody up. But it does make you wonder, what were the CPAs looking at? How did the Wall Street banker do that? And then how did these lenders make these loans without doing any sort of verification? You know, a lot of banks are in this business of financing invoices, but they verify the invoices. And yeah, the fact that these private equity firms didn't do it.
Factoring financing is not unusual, right? I mean, it exists every day.
No, factoring goes back to the ancient Babylonians 4,000 years ago. It's one of the oldest forms of finance.
But and for the listening audience, that's when you're financing your receivables, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Simplest example, we have a local company in Houma, Louisiana, does work for Shell Oil. Shell Oil says, great, good job, and we'll pay you. So now you have an invoice from Shell. It's a receivable. You know that Shell is good for the money. You know that they typically pay in 30 to 45 days. But the company in Houma wants to go on to the next job, so they factor that receivable. And a bank like ours or any other would give them money at a slight discount, and they move on to the next job.
They need working capital for the next job and to get it going. So I was reading the Financial Times, and I found this article where Jim Chanos, who had predicted the Enron disaster in 2001, he characterizes it as follows. As long as everything's working, nobody asks questions. It isn't until someone stumbles or the markets stumble that people say, wait a minute, what are we doing here? This doesn't make any sense. Is it really that bad? I mean, we have so much excess capital in all of these markets that we just go in with our eyes wide open or wide shut or what, and invest money and don't ask any questions?
Well, I think one of the challenges is you have a whole industry of private equity that is looking to invest money. You know, there's more money chasing deals than there are good deals. And so people start, you know, they raise a fund, they've got to invest the money. And so they start stretching the boundaries of what makes sense. And then on the investor side, Wall Street packages these into bonds. So you've got a collateralized debt obligation, a CLO. And what it really means is we have gotten a group of loans, we're putting them together, and we're going to sell it to retail investors. And as long as the loans are repaid, life is good. You'll get your interest rate, and you'll get a nice return. The challenge is if some of the loans go bad, you'll actually lose principal. It's not about interest rate. It's about actually losing your principal. And most retail investors only look at the interest rate. They don't think, oh, wait, I can actually lose the money I invested. And that's what happened in this case. The collateralized loans, in some cases, were collateralized with property that had been pledged multiple times. Now the company doesn't have income. Now it's going bankrupt. And one of the things that happens in a bankruptcy is you're still going to be able to get Fram oil filters. But after the bankruptcy, there's what's called debtor in possession lending. So a new company will step in, they'll make a loan, but they have a priority over everybody else. So whatever cash flow comes in, the loan made to keep the bank, keep the company open, keep the employees on the payroll gets paid first. So your return is going to be significantly less than you anticipated. And in some of these cases, there may be no return at all. You may have advanced money, and when it's double or triple pledged, you just get zero. And it, in some cases, it's worse than zero because you may end up paying attorney's fees to collect nothing.
So, Guy, when we think about the impact of this, because there's another company where similar outcome but for different reasons, Tricolor, and I didn't really get a chance to look into it this morning, but it seems to have kind of rattled the nerves of a number of people both on Wall Street and traditional lenders.
Yeah, and I think it should. I mean, we've talked about the market being very frothy right now. We have super high valuations. Things are priced to perfection. And a lot of the company values are only going to be good if things work. But when you go beyond that and get into the debt piece, some of these debts aren't going to be repaid. And Tricolor was a company that got into what's called subprime lending. So they're lending to people with relatively poor odds of repayment. And, you know, their big odds charts, Fair Isaac does one called FICO, and it estimates how likely you are to repay your debt. And Tricolor said, well, we think that we can charge more interest, and these people that have a poor chance of repaying will actually repay us because they'll want to keep the car. Well, it turned out not to be true. And so Tricolor had a lot of loans that went delinquent. A lot of these loans had been packaged in securities, so whoever owned the securities, and a lot of them were retail investors, ended up losing money. So you invest $1,000 and you get back $600. So a really ugly surprise for the investors. And in a company like Tricolor's case, you know, whoever had the warehouse line to fund these loans before they got securitized, whoever ended up owning the securities, all of those people lost money because the company is now literally out of business, and they're just mopping it up right now and seeing what's left.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I guess people are looking around that are involved in similar types of transactions, and I guess there's a lot of questions being asked at the present time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what I'd tell our listeners is, for the average retail investor, there's no reason to buy a collateralized loan obligation. You know, if you want bonds, yeah, get a government bond fund, get a municipal bond fund, but you're not in a position to analyze corporate credit risk. And the people that are putting these bond funds together are looking for a commission to sell the fund, and their analysis, we now know, is really just not very good. And one of the things that hurts is retail investors will see a brand name they know, and they'll think, okay, it must be a good company. So when you look at first brands, I mean, you've got ANCO, you've got Fram, you've got Autolite. These are brands people know and say, well, it must be okay. I've used a Fram auto filter, so
yeah, it's been around forever.
For the brakes. So it must be all right, but it wasn't. It was over-leveraged, dishonestly pledged collateral, and a guy named Patrick James that told everybody when he was in high school, yes, I'm broke.
Yep. And, well, we don't know if he is today. Hopefully he ends up broke again as a result of his conduct and activities here, for sure. When we come back, we'll talk about France's chaos again, what that means, and the New York contradiction. Stay with us. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be—
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Be right back. Welcome back, folks. France has been in a period of domestic political turmoil for probably a little bit over a year now, and they continue to be challenged by ballooning debt and a budget impasse. So this chaos continues. We're back with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. It doesn't seem like it's letting up any, Guy. It's almost getting worse.
Yeah, and the challenge the French have is what the voters want and what economics dictates are two different things. As part of the European Union agreement, you have to keep your deficit below 3%. France's deficit right now is 5.8%. So the EU has put them on warning and said, look, within 3 years, you've got to get back down to 3. The premier of France, the president of France, rather, has said, look, we're going to do that. The deficit will probably decline to 4.7% this year. S&P, which independently evaluates credit risk, says, it looks to us more like 5.3, and we don't see a path to 3%, and therefore they've lowered the rating on France's debt to a AA-, which is 6 notches above junk. One of the challenges for France is as the debt gets reduced, there are certain bond funds that can't hold it. So as you get lower rated debt, there's some bond funds that have to sell your debt. That raises your borrowing cost, and then you're in a horrible spiral where things get worse. And the fight is, the middle is just doesn't have enough votes to sustain anything. There was a big fight in France about gradually raising the retirement age from 62 to 64. Macron has finally backed off of that and said, look, we may just not be able to do that. Turns out the idea of retiring early is incredibly important to French citizens. But the challenge is the left in France has said, look, we're going to make that to 3 by taxing the rich. We'll increase the corporate tax. We want to spend more on health care, more on renewables, and we want to lower the retirement age. And we're also considering a universal basic income. And S&P looks at these numbers and says, these just don't add up. This will actually increase the deficit. It will probably shrink the economy. The right has different plans, but they do have some tax increases. They're hoping from some government efficiencies. But both left and right also realize that with Russia arming and being very threatening to Europe, they need to spend more on defense. And the question for the French and the problem that they're facing is, well, we don't want to cut any benefits. We don't want to cut any programs. We don't really want to raise taxes except on the very wealthy. And we have to get our budget deficit down to 3. So the challenge is none of this works. And neither side has really told the voters, look, guys, you can't make this work the way you're planning it. We're going to have to reduce services, and you have to be very careful about raising corporate taxes because companies are fluid. And one of the reasons Ireland has boomed is a low corporate tax rate. If corporations have options, which they do in the European Union, you could really be in trouble. So they really don't know what to do, and you've got an election coming up next year for president. This year, the head of the parliament has been thrown out with no confidence votes, and the latest votes are indicating that he may or may not survive. And so it puts the French in a terribly difficult situation because the politicians don't want to tell the people what they really have to do to get down to 3%, and the people don't really want to make the sacrifice to get down to 3%. And the European Union says, guys, you really have to do it.
Well, you know France is in trouble when their borrowing costs are greater than Italy's, because their borrowing costs in Italy, when they had all of their problems, as well as Greece, were off the rails, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there's a phrase in Italian, it's like the German Schadenfreude. It's the malicious delight we feel in the downfall of those that we once envied. And so... It's real, and it's going on. The Italians are loving it. It's like, yeah. Look at you. You pointed fingers at us, but now look at how terrible you are. Now, the thing that's concerning is the French budget deficit is 5.8. They're trying to get it to 3. The U.S. budget deficit last year was 6.3%. And this year-end, the year that just ended, September 30th, it was 6.2%. So we're actually in worse shape in terms of budget deficit than France, which is going this ongoing challenge because they have the pressure from the EU to get their debt in line. But it's a preview of coming attractions for us if we don't solve this, because it's not sustainable for us to have budget deficits in the sixes when the target for the Fed is 2% or less of inflation, and the deficit ideally should be 2% or less of GDP.
Well, let's jump to the federal shutdown update then, because this would be a nice transition. I mean, obviously we're fighting on over this issue of the budget. Federal courts, I think today they actually run out of money. 94 district and 13 circuit courts. They have a fund that they have completely now exhausted. So it's going to be interesting to see how that's going to transition here. We're in the 20th day. Folks are beginning to look at this issue of this ACA premium tax credit extension, you know, that we talked about. I don't know what I'm having real difficult time making heads and tails of those that are for it and those that are against. Those that are against it, I see why. Those are for it, I can't completely, totally understand how the impact to the economy is going to be, because I went back to the original executive order putting this in place, and to me it seemed like everybody realized that it was temporary as a result of the pandemic. Now they want to make it permanent, and you know, I think the CBO is saying that we're going to lose billions upon billions of dollars, $488 billion over the next 10 years alone, if we extend that. That's according to the Cato Institute. These are big numbers, and here we are. You know, we're talking about France, and actually, I'm glad you appropriately pointed it out. We're a much stronger economy, obviously, a lot more diverse and a broader economy, but still, we're facing numbers that are record-setting.
Oh, they are. And in peacetime, it's unprecedented to have this level of deficits as far as the eye can see. So the challenge, as people look at it and are concerned about the deficit, is we can't spend more money when we have these high deficits. Now, the 2004 to 5 was basically a push. The deficit was about $1.8 trillion, a tiny bit smaller for the year that just ended, about $41 billion, which is a rounding error in the federal budget. So a tiny bit of progress was made, but we won't make progress if we permanently increase spending. And so on the conservative side, they're saying, guys, we can't permanently increase spending. Now, the thing that I wish would occur, and I wish both sides would focus on this, is, okay, we're talking about healthcare spending. The United States spends $14,885 per capita on healthcare. The next biggest expenditure in the developed world is Switzerland at $9,900, followed by Germany at $9,300 per person, the Netherlands at 8,400 and the Swiss at, Swedes at 7,800. So literally in Sweden, they're spending half what we do per capita on healthcare, but their longevity is larger than ours. So I think if you were Team D or Team R and you had the idea of, okay, let's actually address healthcare. Why are we spending twice as much to get worse results? What can we do to improve things? And unfortunately, the Affordable Care Act has turned out not to be affordable. The impetus was to reduce healthcare cost. It didn't work. Healthcare inflation is still higher than regular inflation. And it's time to step back and say, okay, what went wrong? The objective is a great objective. I think everybody in America would love to have healthcare costs go down, but why are we spending twice as much as the G20 countries? You know, people in Sweden are having poor health outcomes. They're actually having better outcomes. So the idea of having that debate and that discussion is very important, but we're settled into very strong political arguments. And right now, Senator Mike Johnson, who runs the House, has said, there's no need for us to go back. Chuck Schumer has always wanted a clean CR when the shoe was on the other foot, and we're not going to compromise. Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries have said, we're not going to bend, we're not going to break. So you have two opposing sides, and neither one is looking at a solution, and neither one's really addressing healthcare costs, which I wish we would. I've said before there was a bill to make an automatic two-week CR whenever they don't agree so that this would never happen again. I'd love to see that. But I think we're missing the big debate on why is our health care cost so much more expensive than the rest of the world.
You were there when I delivered my keynote address. This is what I was talking about with government and government actors fearing consequence instead of embracing it. Because if you embrace the consequence, you would have provided a remediation to originally Obamacare and now the Affordable Care Act, but nobody wants to do it. They don't want to consume the political capital to do it. And by the way, thank you so much for you and your groups inviting us to participate and for me to deliver the keynote. But the transformational change is going to have to come from us individually, because they're not going to do it. And we've seen this. We've seen this show over and over and over again, right?
And Newt, your point was appropriate. I wish everybody could have been there to hear you, but it's government can work, but the citizens have to demand that it works, because the political inertia of let's keep doing things the way we've always done them. And we're in a situation now where, you know, you have pharmacy benefit managers that extract money. You have different people in the middle that extract what effectively economic rents from our healthcare system, but without making people healthier. And we as citizens need to say, guys, Team D, Team R, we want to reduce healthcare cost, and we want to keep standards and quality high, just like the Europeans have done it. And that's going to mean you're going to have to tell some of your big donors, no, what you're doing is not right. What you're doing is not effective. And we can do better, and we have to do better, because it's not about us. You know, the next generation is going to have to pay these debts back. And we don't want to bury them. I'm well reminded by one of my baby boomer friends talking to a millennial. He says, good luck. We had a giant party. We left you the mess and the bill.
Yeah. Have fun with that.
Like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. When we return, we'll talk about the good news at Tulane, and we'll get an update on the AI fraud. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. And Guy, good news at Tulane. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. It's wonderful to see stories like this. Bloomberg Business Week does what they call an MBA return on equity, return on investment analysis. And what they do is they look at what does it cost to get an MBA and what do you earn over the following 10 years? What they found is last year was a very, very tough year. 80% of business schools had a declining return on investment. So you spent money, the next 10 years, your return, what you would make as a new employee actually went down. But the headline that really, actually I wish it was a headline, it was in the third column, but it should have been the headline. Tulane University's Freeman School of Business had the largest profitability gain. Its ROI wow. more than doubled to 9.9%, thanks to a 27% rise in median post-MBA compensation. So out of all the schools Bloomberg Business Week looked at, Tulane was the best. So really more good news for our local economy. Congratulations to Tulane. And interesting trivia. Many years ago, I was an adjunct professor in the business school at Tulane. So I can't claim any credit for this because it was a long time ago, but I'm glad that my former colleagues are doing so well for the students.
Very excited to hear about that. Actually, I taught it at the city college for 9 years, business law, and I loved every second of it. I wish I was still teaching, quite frankly. I enjoyed it.
Me too.
Just
it's
couldn't
a lot
afford,
of fun.
Just couldn't afford to do it. But it was a lot of fun, and that's a sad commentary to say I couldn't afford to do it. Let's talk about AI fraud.
Oh, no, this is scary. As you know, I did a talk on AI fraud for the NOMAR conference, very well received. But since then, people have been coming up to me and telling me about frauds. And the one that I heard Sunday at lunch was particularly scary. Young man got a text from a friend of his, said, look, I know I'm doing well, but I've run into a problem. I need to borrow money. I've got a challenge, and I just need to get some money. And their friends said, okay, let me see what I can do, but was a little suspicious. And so he texted back, said, look, let's do a Zoom call. I just want to talk about this a little more. You know, if you really need help, I'm happy to help you. So did a Zoom call. It's his friend's face, his friend's voice, his friend's mannerism, asking to make this loan to him. And he thought, okay, you know, I'll help. You know, we've been friends for years. Said, let me walk outside because he's on his cell phone, you know, get the details. When he walked outside, the connection ended. And when he didn't resurface, and the connection had seemed to be from his friend's cell phone, he called his friend and said, listen, I want to talk to you about this loan. He said, what do you mean, what loan? He says, what do you mean, what loan? I just saw you on a Zoom call. I said, that wasn't me. I don't need a loan. I'm doing fine. So
wow.
Literally, AI had impersonated his friend's voice, his friend's mannerism, and when he went on a Zoom call, it looked like his friend. And that happened right here in Metairie last week.
That is scary. I mean, really scary, right?
Oh, I agree. we were talking about it at our family, said, you know, we really need like a secret word. Like, okay, if somebody says, you know, I'm your niece, I'm your cousin, I need money. Okay, what's the family password? Because it looks just like, and he said, look, it looked like his friend. It sounded like his friend.
And you know, you want to have a society and communities that their first inclination is to help, right? But when you hear stories like that, I mean, it just creates pause where your first inclination may be, I need to validate whether or not this is all real.
Yeah, and that's where he started. He said, look, we're friends. Of course, if you're in trouble, I want to help. I mean, you would do that for your friends.
Sure.
And I would do that for mine. But now you know, man, you got to verify it in a way that no one would have thought. And the Zoom call you would think would be perfect, but not anymore.
You know, the scary thing about AI, and I've said this about other things, that the only limiting factor is one's imagination, truly, right?
Yeah, and the crooks are better and better at it, and they can now replicate voice and faces. And I think I've mentioned this before, but I went to the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting, and Warren Buffett said he got a call, and it was about Warren being kidnapped. And he said, you know, after about 5 minutes, he said, you know, I got to get my wallet out. Warren's in trouble. I mean, what am I going to do? Yeah. And he told the audience, he said, man, this is a weapon of mass destruction. It is scary, and it is something that we need to be very careful of in the future.
Absolutely. No doubt, for sure. As always, Guy Williams, we appreciate your time, your insight, and the incredible news that you bring us. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a great week.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk In text line. We'll check in with Scoot to see how manic today is going to be. Well, a lot of times I said I'm loyal to a fault, and Scoot joins us. Scoot, I watched that entire Saints game.
Yeah.
It was painful, though.
Me too. I know, but Chris Olave caught the ball. I mean, he was awesome. So you fix one thing, and something else breaks, and it's... It's really discouraging, and then on top of that, I watched the LSU game.
Yeah.
So that was tough,
too. I missed that.
Yeah, you're lucky. Tulane beat Army, but, you know, I mean, it was good, but I wasn't overly impressed with Tulane. But anyway, they won. They got a few votes to get in the top 25, but they're not in the top 25. All right, right. So we'll talk about the Saints. We'll talk about LSU. And this was supposed to be such a big year for LSU. We'll talk about that. And the president has released George Santos from prison after he pleaded guilty to two counts of wire fraud. Should George Santos, who likes to dress in women's clothes, should he have stayed in jail?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, that wasn't a question. Scoot's up next. Stay tuned.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radnor, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.